Yeah. How's it going?
Congratulations on your star.
Oh my heavens, it was so exciting.
And your angel mama was there.
You know she was.
She came out, you know, and she doesn't go out that much anymore. And she said, I wouldn't miss it for the world. So it was thrilling. And all my Ben-Hur.
And your star is right next to him.
Yeah. I know, isn't it romantic?
It is.
I said to my husband, if I was going to lie down on Hollywood Boulevard, I can't think of anybody else I would like to be lying next to.
I quickly have to ask you, Roma, will we see you again doing any more of Martha's, you know, signed, sealed, delivered episodes?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm thrilled for her that she's doing that. She's such a great writer. But I've been very busy with Lightworkers Media, my production company, and I'm committed to bringing content that is inspirational and hopeful. We have our saying over here that it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness and illuminate the darkness in whatever way we can. And that's what Ben-Hur is about, I think. A story. It's a big action-adventure film, and it's exciting, and it delivers on all of that. But the takeaway is that instead of just seeing a story of revenge, you leave knowing you've seen a story that encourages reconciliation and forgiveness. And that's pretty big stuff, isn't it?
How exciting is it to see what John Ridley and Keith Clark did with the script? Because they went back to Lew Wallace's source material. They kind of bypassed a lot of William Wyler and the screenwriter's six came up with, and really brought it back to the biblical gospels, and a lot of those elements, well, really the foundation of brotherly love. How important was that to the two of you to have a script like that as your working script?
I think it was really important. I mean, the two big changes in its value proposition was that you get to see Jesus, and so you get to really experience what it is that causes the change, and also the fact that Masala lives, you know, so you get a chance for the reconciliation. And what's really clever about what they did was, so in a DC Marvel movie world, people are really used to what's the perceived good guy killing the bad guy, right? And so how do you manage to fulfill that desire from a mass audience, but then switch it? So here we have, at the end of the chariot race, you do think Masala died. So if you're looking for that good guy defeats bad guy value, you got it. But then the movie doesn't end there. And then at the foot of the cross, Esther reveals Masala's alive. And then you go and you get that moment where, like, they forgive each other. And it's like a really... It's something you don't often see in action blockbuster movies at all. And you know what? That original book was written in 1880, 15 years after the Civil War, where the nation was ripped apart. And I bet you a lot of Americans, both freed slaves, foreign fighters, Americans here, probably thought, this country's not going to make it. I mean, people must have really thought, wow, what just happened? The country's not going to make it. Of course, America went on to become the most powerful country in the world. Cut to 2016. We're not in a civil war, but it's kind of a mess right now. Right? And so maybe the movie's meant to come out this year. Maybe maybe there'll be some value that comes out of the movie beyond just being very entertaining, where people think about reconciliation. And that'll be kind of cool.
Now, there are three approaches in response to Rome that I see in this film. Whereas the Zealots, you know, violence-driven, you know, and Judah is non-interventionist, and then Jesus, the pacifist, you could say. So, how do you make sure that, you know, some people will say, "No, we can't just pick one approach. You got to pick a combination of both or three of them," in response to certain conflict. How do you say to that kind of argument?
Well, the first thing that if you met God. On a path, and you're someone who never ever heard of the Bible or God, anything, some remote place, and he could only have a minute to tell you something, he'd only tell you two things: love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. So that's the only thing that would be bizarre. You could condense the whole Bible into this. And so here we have this movie. Forgiveness is the only way. Because you can't go to heaven if you haven't forgiven others, because you won't be forgiven. It says that really clearly. And really, not forgiving other people, it's actually hurting yourself. But it's really destroying yourself within. No question. Everyone here knows that. Even though you might be mad at people for certain things, you know that actually it's not going to work. The only thing is to be forgive someone. And so here the movie has that value. So that's the only through line tone. So the movie is a movie and it's fun and entertaining. But actually, the woven through line that some people will take from it, some people won't. But enough people will take it that I think there's a supernatural power that will affect relationships with people. And it's not the solution to everything, but it's one piece in the puzzle of rebuilding the fabric of our society, I think.
Thank you.
Now, how early did the two of you get involved? Were you involved at the beginning of the project or in the timeline of making the film? When did
before the production's over, we were given the script. So
okay.
The script was
very
finished.
Early on.
So the script was finished.
By Gary Barber at MGM and invited to join the team. And we brought the script home and read it. And, you know, it was such a page turner. Mm-hmm. And it was Ridley's Pass. And it was just so character driven and story driven. And had this through line
mm-hmm.
of with the faith element woven through. I mean, something that's very effective for me in the film that actually wasn't even in the script, that came out of an organic moment when our actors were working together, is there's a stone that Jesus grasps on his way when he discovers, was it Judah grasp, when he meets Jesus on his way to the cross. And he ends up clutching that stone all through the crucifixion. And it's almost as if the whole movie, from the moment his life starts to unravel after the zealot fires that arrow, it's almost as if he clutches a stone then, like a metaphorical stone, and he holds that stone, and the tension of the movie, he holds it right through to the crucifixion. And then there he is in front of the cross, and he hears Jesus saying, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And it's like he has a moment, a supernatural moment. Through grace, he understands that his only way forward is to release that stone of anger, of bitterness, and he lets it go. And it's a very powerful moment in the movie,
In fact, friends of ours, you know, we're very involved in the church community, and obviously there's this very large church in America, churches with hundreds of thousands of members. One of the largest churches last week provided pebbles, stones, at the entrance of the church. And at the end of the service, they showed the trailer for Ben-Hur, explained the value of the stone, and invited anyone who wanted to release revenge to drop the pebble at the foot of the cross. And there's a huge pile of stones at the end of service where people had released their anger. And I think it's such a nice thing. It's hard to, but wish we had a couple more months and we could encourage that to people. Because, boy, are we going to need that kind of releasing of anger come like November. I mean, because really, in the end, it's one nation under God that's leading the whole world. America props up the entire world economically and everything. It's all of us. Like, if we're torn apart, what happens to the world?
Now, you know, Tinger has told me for 2 years how thrilled he was working with the two of you and everything.
That's so nice.
That you were teaching him about producing. What led you to him and his directing style? Because this isn't typically a team, what one would think of as a Timor Bekmambetov film.
Well, I guess, you know, although Timor has these values, right? So if you look at Night Watch and Day Watch, have you seen those movies?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's where I first discovered Timor. And that is light versus dark, right? And so he has that, believe me, he's really clever. He's a very, very well-read, very sensitive, very deep person who, if you ask Timor to explain why he did something, I'm not kidding, if you ask him to explain one choice he made, he literally could talk to you for 45 minutes on like layers and layers and layers and layers. And he really is an artist. He really, can you imagine that Timur could have been a painter or something? Like, he's really layered, or a poet. He's really, really...
yeah, he's deep. He's a deep thinker, and he cares so deeply and passionately about this story. And he has such a kindness himself as an individual. And that kindness I saw at work time and again as how he worked as a director, you know, having been a performer for many years myself. And I've worked with some directors who will remain nameless, who don't always necessarily bring the best out in your performance. And Timur has such a lovely way about him. I think he really was such a guiding light to all of our actors. And he's done such a phenomenal job here in bringing the story to the screen and in doing these big set pieces. I mean, honestly, the organization and the vision that was needed to do both the naval battle and the chariot race, and that he has managed to create an experience in both of them where you feel like you're on that boat or you feel like you're on that chariot, and that's a real particular skill set that he has.
He reminds me a bit, he's much more like you than like me, because I'm reactive to things, and Roma always finds the space between stimulus and response, and Timur is more like that, right? Timur doesn't react immediately to anything. He'll stop and think about it, and you do. I have to learn that more. I'm much more reactive.
can you talk a bit about your experience at Vatican when the Pope blesses Jesus Christ, apparently, I heard?
Yes, so. It was very special. Because we filmed in Italy, entirely on location in Italy, and we were working in Rome, and we had an opportunity to go to the Vatican. And, you know, we knew that a few of us could get down onto the front row to where the Pope was. And, of course, Rodrigo was our elected representative to go down there. And he had a chance to speak with the Holy Father. The Pope laid his hands on his head and gave him a blessing. And it was very, very special, special to him, special to all of us on the movie, that occurred. And, you know, part of the job that we've been doing the last few months as the film is being edited is out into the churches across this country, across denominations, to show early screenings and to get the support of the church, because I think there's a real opportunity here for the church going American, that to see Jesus on the big screen, first of all, is always a fabulous thing for Christians. But the message of the movie is needed now more than ever, I think. And to that end, we've got the support of, Pastor Rick Warren, Pastor Joel Osteen, Cardinal O'Malley, Cardinal Worrell, countless pastors throughout
Archbishop
the country.
Gomez. I mean, Archbishop Gomez. Largest Catholic archdiocese in America is Los Angeles.
Wow.
People think it's Boston or Chicago or New York. Los Angeles. And so, you know, Archbishop Gomez came to the house and screened the movie with Roma in our theatre at the house. You know, Cardinal O'Malley has given official support of it. And actually, Cardinal Worrell, who's the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., wrote to all bishops in the United States, encouraging them to encourage parishioners to go to the movie. I mean, it's like huge. This doesn't happen. You know, it's because of the message. And also, you know, that the movie doesn't try too hard. It's not like trying to send someone to Sunday school it's all about the message. The message just is there. It just is, you know.
It's not preachy.
No. But you get it. But you get it. Right? And if you don't want to get it, then you won't. But, you know, like, a lot of people today, a lot of different journalists have come up to us privately today and said, "Oh, I saw it last night. I went home and I had a conversation at home." Because, you know, you guys watch movies for a living, you know, it's like what you... So, you know, and listen, you understand, this. Certain movies do massive box office that really aren't that great, you know, and it's like a marketing machine, right? You know, right? And here we have something that hopefully fulfills that action, fun, but there is something deeper, you know, and it tends to work out for us in messaging around the world. Like, you think that over the next 30 years millions and millions of people will see Ben-Hur and take away that thought of, wow, just forgive someone. That'd be so great. When we did the Bible, we said to people, and they thought we were nuts. I mean, everyone thought no one would watch it, first of all, and said, like, you guys have lost your mind. Who's going to watch the Bible on primetime TV? 100 million Americans watched it. And we said, before we ever knew that number, we said, over a billion people are going to watch this. And people were like, these guys are crazy. Way more than a billion people. I mean, like, way, way, way.
Yeah.
In China alone, over 400 million people watched the Bible series.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like really kind of wild.
That's a
right?
God thing. That's nothing
yeah.
to do with us.
No, of course. No, of course it's not.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you
for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It does have that feel of the movies that we grew up with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice, right?
Yeah.
Makes you nostalgic, right?
Yes.
Yes.